Good afternoon. I'm going to call the committee to order. It's the Senate Committee on General Government Accountability for Wednesday, April 12, 2017. And we've got a few things to do today. First, I'm going to work on Senate Bill 867A. I'm going to open a public hearing on that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 867A comes from the Business and Transportation Committee with one no vote. It creates a task force on maritime sector workforce development to make recommendations for incorporation by the State Workforce Investment Board into our statewide workforce investment plan. It requires a report to the statewide State Workforce Investment Board and the legislature by September 15, 2018, and sunsets December 31, 2018. It takes effect the 91st day after sine die. There's a fiscal impact that issued and a no revenue impact.
Thank you. David Brocksmith, Rob Bovet, and Mark Landauer. And for everybody else, this is the only bill we have paperwork for, so no other bills are going to be moved because we don't have the paperwork, but we will hear them.
David's not here. He was here, but he's left.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, he's got on there, too?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel Association of Oregon Counties. Senate Bill 867 is designed to fill a big gap in Oregon law currently. We have really, unlike our neighbors to the north and south, we have not dealt with workforce development in our marine sector. It's one of our major economic drivers and sectors in Oregon. This bill would essentially be step one in a multi-year step process. We would begin to define what the marine sector actually looks like by setting up a task force. Now, I know that generally task force bills are not favored this session, and we were cognizant of that when we wrote this bill. So you'll notice that the state is not required to staff this task force. The way I wrote it, the Association of Oregon Counties is required to staff this task force. So I think the only, hopefully the only issue for you is the allocation of how many task forces you allow this session with legislators sitting on it. I can tell you that this bill comes to you from the Oregon Coastal Caucus as a priority bill. I don't think we're going to have any problem filling the legislative seats on this. In fact, they may have to arm wrestle for who actually gets these particular seats. So again, this is just step one in trying to define our marine sector and get some workforce development resources moved toward it. And then with that, I'll be quiet and turn it over to Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you, Chair Riley, committee. I just wanted to stop by and thank this committee for their great work on this bill and to urge its your support. This, as Mr. Bovet already spoke about, will create this task force on the maritime workforce development and study the need. We already know there's a need. It is one of the things that we can do to assist our fishers coast-wide. The Pacific, just for an example, the Marine Pacific Management Council, correct?
I believe that is correct.
Thank you. The Oregonian published that they will be closing the ocean salmon fishery from Gold Beach and Humbug South, so Gold Beach and Brookings, for the 2017 year. This will have an enormous economic impact to an already struggling district where we're still 6.4% below mean zero as far as the recession and unemployment. So anything we can do to help our coastal communities and the industries that support them, which are our fisheries, we need to, in my opinion. Thank you very much, and we'll leave the rest to Mr. Landauer.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association and the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association. The impact of marine economy is actually very large and unfortunately not very well recognized. Just the ports alone in Oregon, according to a 2014 Business Economic Impact Statement, stated that there are over 100,000 jobs, direct, indirect, and induced by ports in the state of Oregon. And I remind you, there are only 23 of us in the state of Oregon, and they're responsible for more than $15 billion of economic activity. So the impact of the marine sector is tremendously large. Getting a better handle of not only the needs of the maritime industry, but how we can fill jobs that really are family wage, well-paying jobs is really a critical mission that we have regrettably not taken very good advantage of. So I would recommend and commend this bill for its movement further on. I think that this could do a very good service to a number of people who are looking for family wage jobs, and we need to be able to fill those voids out there that really do exist. So thank you very much.
So, and I assume Representative Smith is going to serve on this task force?
It would be, Chair Riley, it would be my pleasure to serve on this task force.
Good. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Scott Winkles?
He doesn't.
No? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to close this public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 867A.
Chair Riley, I move Senate Bill 867A to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Boer moves Senate Bill 867A to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion?
Just one comment. He was talking about the ports and that there's 23, I guess.
Yeah.
And at first I was just envisioning this being a coastal deal, but really, I mean, you got all along the Columbia River as well. So that's interesting. I think it's an interesting concept to have the AOC staff it, and I bet they will have to arm wrestle to participate as far as legislators are concerned.
All right. Other discussion? Any objections? So Senate Bill 867A passes unanimously and goes to Ways and Means. Okay. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1052. Senator Winters.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1052 requires enabling legislation for new or increased fees adopted by state agencies in order for those fees to become effective. It declares an emergency, is effective July 1st, 2017.
Thank you, Chair Riley and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Jackie Winters. I represent District 10. And Senate Bill 1052 is... And let me go back a little bit. You know, historically, normally, a practice that has occurred, it's where we ratify fees after the fact. Senate Bill 1052 is to take us forward rather than backwards. And I say that because ratifying after the fact was done when we were having biennial sessions. So it was a lot easier to do after the fact than it was before. We no longer do biennial sessions. We're now on annual sessions. And it seems to me that as this legislative body that we need to have presented to us, the issue of fee increases prior to rather than to simply rubber stamp what has already occurred. And that's the genesis of Senate Bill 1052 and why I brought it forward. I think it's very important that this body, this legislative body, have the information prior to rather than to do something after it has already occurred. And for that, Senate President, see, I was going to call you the President today.
You can call me that, but it won't help.
So, Chair Riley, and if you have any questions, I'm willing to
questions
answer.
For Senator Winters? Thank you very much. And unfortunately, we don't have the paperwork for this today, so I'm just going to close this public hearing. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 45. And I'm going to call Tim Conway and Brian Niebart.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 45 makes the requirement for Public Employees Benefit Board and Oregon Educators Benefit Board to offer long-term care insurance permissive rather than mandatory, declares an emergency as effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment that removes the emergency clause.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, Brian Niebart, Legislative Coordinator for Healthcare Programs at the Oregon Health Authority. This is, frankly, a pretty simple bill. It makes the offering of long-term care plans for PEB discretionary rather than mandatory. This aligns with other benefits, such as disability, that are not mandatory. It doesn't mean that we would be stop offering those plans. There's been no indication from the board to do so, but it would give that to their discretion. The reason we put this forward is long-term care plans have become increasingly difficult to contract for, or finding fewer and fewer companies to offer them, and those that the one that we do, their premiums have risen excessively, and we're seeing a lot of people stop opting to use those plans. Currently, they're 100% paid for by the employee. It's just a pass through where PEB takes the money from their check to pay the premium.
Excuse me, Chairman Riley and committee members. I thought you might find this funny real quick. The regional managers.
Could you put your name on the record, please?
Tim Cowan. Thank you. I thought you might find this funny. The region heads were evaluated based on their FTE or full-time equivalents. And so I'd visit my branches four times a year, and I would tell them, get the efficiencies. The bank that year hired 26 college grads. I hired 25 of them. So they had a little get-together the night before the interviews, and the college graduates asked me, what do you do? And I said, not what you think. You think I look at operations, loans, staffing. I don't. I get paid for what I don't do. And then they asked me the question about, what do you look for in a grad? And I said, not what you think. You think I look at your transcripts, your grades, your work experience, professional evaluations. I don't. And we spend 30 minutes together, and if I don't have fun, I don't want to spend the next 20 years not having fun. To the bill. I just put a couple statements on what I testified before. I think you should establish a program where cost savings, as the examples below, contribute to the program. The program should be a pay-as-you-go program. This allows the purchase, I think, of the insurance products when they're younger, and I think it would be cheaper. With veterans, which I am, the veterans do not get long-term care. TRICARE does not provide that. And I'm just going to read a couple statements real quick out of what I testified before. I think if you use the talents of the state employees and find ways to reduce costs, it does help, I think, take care of the PERS shortcomings. But I think it would help with insurance products for the employees. And so that would be an incentive for them also. You heard my other testimony before, so I just left that to you in writing, and thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Not seeing any. Thank you very much. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 45. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 88.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 88 changes the name of the fee that's used for electronic government portals from a convenience fee to a portal provider fee, and clarifies that a quorum of the Electronic Government Portal Advisory Board is a majority of voting members, declares emergency is effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment for this one as well that also removes the emergency clause.
Wally Rogers.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Wally Rogers. I'm the e-government and transparency manager for the Office of the State CIO. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 88. a bill that our office considers a housekeeping bill. The Electronic Government Portal Advisory Board provides oversight primarily to the services provided through the state CIOZ government program. The board has 13 positions, four of which are non-voting positions. The board advises the office of the state CIO on the portfolio of e-government services that are available to state agencies and prioritizes the projects and initiatives. Senate Bill 88 seeks to do two things. First, the bill seeks to reduce the quorum requirements for the Electronic Government Portal Advisory Board from a majority of the entire board to a majority of the voting members. Second, the bill seeks to replace the term convenience fee with the term portal provider fee. With respect to the quorum requirements, ORS 182-218 requires the Electronic Government Portal Advisory Board to have a majority of the entire board, 7 of 13 members, present to convene a meeting. Additionally, the board must have 7 of 9 voting members present and agree to conduct its business. So even if the board can establish a quorum with the voting and non-voting members, the statute still requires a supermajority of the voting members just to approve minutes or decide on advice to provide. As noted by Board Chair Peter Threlkall's written testimony received, the board has had to cancel 4 of the last 11 quarterly meetings. Turning to the term convenience fee, as submitted in the written testimony by Cora Parker, finance manager for the state treasurer's office, the term convenience fee is already used by the payment industry. And the state treasurer's office specifically requested we use a different term to avoid this confusion. The portal provider team is a term we agreed would work. This change would not impact any of the business of the board. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Actually, just a real quick
go
question.
Ahead.
I'm actually on the electronic, and they're often not able to meet when I can meet, so I'm one of those members that probably isn't showing up on some of these meetings. But so the portal provider fee is the name of it, because it makes it sound like the person or the not the state agency, but some outside entity is charging for this, or I'm just trying to clarify.
Yeah, the statute 182-132 provides the state CIO the ability to set a convenience fee upon advice of the Electronic Portal Advisory Board. And that convenience fee, the term convenience fee, is conflicting with the payment industry, the payment card industry, Visa and MasterCard. They have a specific term, and it's caused confusion with them. So they've requested that we change the term.
Good. Any other questions? Is there anybody else signed up to speak on this? If not, is there somebody else?
No, that's it.
Good. With that, I'll close the public hearing. And we do not have the paperwork on this one either, so I'll move it forward. So I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 317.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 317 requires public bodies that conduct public meetings to post conspicuous, clear explanations on their websites how the public may access written materials and maintain all written materials at central, easy accessible physical locations unless materials are available online and free of charge. Excludes certain materials associated with executive sessions and school hearings concerning juveniles. There's a dash one amendment that adds Indian Country to the list of places where the governing bodies of state, county, and city entities may hold meetings.
So, Michael Mason, Rob Bovet.
Thank you, Chair Riley and members of the Senate General Government Committee. So my name is Michael Mason. I'm here on behalf of the Coquille Indian Tribe and the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. For some decades, there have been meetings held by state boards and commissions, either mostly at Caneta, but at other locations on reservation. There have been meetings of county commissions as well. I think Mr. Bobet can comment about how many of those have taken place jointly between Lincoln County and the Confederate Tribes of the Salettes Indians. So we had thought there wasn't a problem with this, that people could meet, and a lot of times these facilities are some of the best facilities in their county, and it was convenient to have the meetings. So we learned in late 2015 that the Department of Justice thinks otherwise, and that because of a question about jurisdiction and about the limits of public meetings, as they read the public meetings law, they have instructed state boards and commissions not to meet in Indian Country. So there are now 9 locations, counting Burns Paiute, which I'm not sure they have a facility that would work, but at any rate, 9 locations where state boards and commissions cannot meet and take any actions unless they're having a joint meeting with a tribal governing body about something that's primarily dealing with the reservation. So what we're trying to do with the Dash 1 amendment is normative, trying to bring this back, clarify this, and bring it back to what's been going on for decades. I can personally speak to some Fish and Wildlife Commission meetings that took place at Caneta where decisions were made. So rather than have those be in question and, you know, have just these blank spots on the map, and again, this is, you know, the Dash 1 would fix this, but it is a may, not a shall. It's optional. It's obviously up to the government body to decide if it's significant to meet on the reservation. So I appreciate your hearing this, and we're really talking about the Dash 1. My clients don't have an opinion on the underlying bill. I don't know if anybody's here speaking for that, but I haven't noticed anybody yet.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, again, Rob Bovet, legal counselor for the Association of Oregon Counties. We, in fact, do have an opinion on that, and I suspect you'll hear from a couple more people that have an opinion on that. So AOC has a position on both the bill itself and the Dash amendments. First, the Dash amendments were supportive of – okay, well, I guess just back up. Don't necessarily agree with what I've heard of the Attorney General's opinion based on statute. However, in order to preserve our ability to hold joint meetings with tribal councils, to hold meetings at tribal facilities within our counties, respectively, we would want clarification. And the Dash 1s or Dash 2s or whichever ones you decide to move will actually give that clarity and restore us to status quo ante. So that's a good thing. The bill itself, however, we have a couple concerns with. First off, it is essentially an unfunded mandate, but it's kind of, with respect to counties, a very unique unfunded mandate, because if a city or a port or another small district didn't have a website, right, we would have to post all their stuff on our website. So it's an unfunded mandate to us, plus we get, I guess, the mandate from them as well. So we're really not interested in doing all that work. No offense to our city and special district partners, but essentially commandeering our websites for other public notice purposes is probably not a good policy decision to make here without at least funding that. There are other provisions in the bill that I think my colleagues from the League of Oregon Cities and Special Districts would like to speak to. So I guess from our preference, we would prefer that instead of having the Dash amendments be a tack on, we would prefer it be a gut and stuff.
So you think the amendment is better than the bill, is that?
Oh, Mr. Chair, quite.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Scott Winkles, Mark Landauer. I have a feeling I know what you're going to say. We'll let you say it.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities, all 241 incorporated cities in Oregon. We do have some concerns with the base bill. We are supportive of the amendment. I can conceive of several scenarios where a city board commission would want to have a meeting on Indian Country, and we believe they should be allowed to do so. To the base bill, I read the bill, and I find it to be duplicative of a current requirement. that right now all public bodies in the state, all state agencies, are required to have posted or made available their public records policies, including the point of contact person and the fee schedules and all of these sorts of issues that are that we're required to do by law. Everybody should already be doing that. Additionally, I will note that this committee has entertained several bills that recognize that people get their information in different ways now, and we would point out that if the committee does want to see us to expand our electronic communications with our citizens, the passage of Senate Bill 210, which would allow us to create a public website and that's searchable, trackable for notices and publishing of minutes and the sorts of items that are covered in this bill, that would make that certainly more, a lot more efficient, easier, and cheaper for cities to undertake. With that, I'm eager for questions, and I will turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Landauer.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. Mark Landauer here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I would echo several of the comments made by my previous colleagues regarding the Dash 1 Amendment. Certainly support being able to utilize tribal facilities for meetings. As a matter of fact, some of our districts do so regularly, and it's a little bit disconcerting that the Attorney General's office may have stated in a recent opinion that those meetings don't necessarily count. To the base bill, as you know, I represent approximately 950 districts across the state of Oregon. Those districts primarily are very small rural districts, and we recently did a survey of our members and discovered that approximately 400 of them do not, in fact, have a website. The result of that, of course, under the base bill would require that those districts provide all the materials that took place at one of their public meetings, bundle them up, and send them off to the counties for the counties to post online. I suspect that the counties aren't necessarily terribly eager to undertake that new job on behalf of the special districts. I don't quibble in any way, shape, or form with the idea or notion that this material ought to be made available to the public. That's certainly something that we all strive and want to do, is be more transparent. And you've had a number of bills before you already with regard to public records, and I suspect we'll see a few more before the deadline ends. Nevertheless, this does present a potential challenge for these local districts having to put this material together and then rely on the counties to post that material on their websites in order to be compliant with this proposed law. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I believe, if I'm not wrong, that the, or at least we talked about allowing local governments be able to access the state transparency website and be able to post to that. I'm wondering if that would be a solution as far as these small districts are concerned.
Anyone want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, we'd be happy to send it wherever you tell us to do so.
the question is, who would take that material and put it online. When we talk about putting stuff on our transparency website, we're assuming that people will do it on their own and not just send us paper and put it on there. So that's something we might want to discuss. Mm-hmm. But any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to end the public hearing on Senate Bill 317. Does that clear us up? That is the end of the agenda. And so I'm going to adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.